Parkcast, the UK's original theme park podcast.
Welcome back to Parkcast, park fans. You know by now we are a podcast for theme park fans. If that's you, you're in the right place. We're here every week. We're chatting about all the things going on in the UK theme park industry, worldwide as well, some of the big announcements, and just stuff that we fancy having a bit of a chat about. I'm Bex, this is Kev.
Hello.
And we're also joined this week by Kip Hakes.
Hello.
You might know Kip from YouTube. He does loads of blogs and vlogs and chats, and we're going to find out all about him very, very soon. Firstly, though, before we get into today's episode, the sort of big breaking news from this week is Amanda Thompson is going to be giving us more thrust than ever before in 2025 when Ice Blast, PlayStation The Ride, whatever we call it, is reopening. And it's going to be reopened as Launchpad.
Mm. Are we excited about this? Space themed by Valhalla. I love it. I love the chaos at Blackpool. Let's just embrace the chaos. My brain cannot handle the theming.
I think what sort of made me go, oh, okay, was when they released the image and it essentially looked like someone had put an astronaut next to a shot ride. And like type that in and got the image out and
ChatGPT.
That was it, ChatGPT. No, that was it. And they're like, okay, that's fine with it. And then they sort of used a bit more AI to make the sort of trailer thing for it. And yeah. But yeah, I just thought, oh, it's just such a weird thing. I mean, it's great that they're not getting rid of a ride. You know, it's great that it's not being demolished. But a space theme next to Vikings. Oh man.
For announcements from Blackpool, and it's like, was that we were waiting on for the whole season?
When she talked about being taken to new heights, that was just it. It was just Ice Blast.
The same heights, just ride. With more thrust.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
I still cannot get over that they included that in a press release. Hilarious. Well, I will be looking forward to it. Don't get me wrong. We'll be going to ride it. But in terms of the space...
There's going to be so many thrust jokes over the next season.
We've got to be very, very careful on this podcast today, mm-hmm. I think. I think we have to bear in mind there is the flying machines right next to it. So in a way...
That is true.
We can forgive it. Maybe slightly, but that doesn't explain why Valhalla's there and Derby Race is right next to that either. It doesn't matter. It's
doesn't
Blackpool
matter.
Pleasure Beach.
Unless we get Valhalla in space. You never know.
Do not give them any ideas.
We can get wet in space.
Exactly. There's right. Loads. Anyway.
Moving on. In all seriousness, I think we're all kind of semi-relieved that it's not just going to be SBNO next season as it has been this year, and hopefully it will do something to the ride lineup at Blackpool Pleasure Beach, which hasn't been brilliant this week. Actually, whilst I just mentioned Blackpool Pleasure Beach, we do have our episode on them, which you can go back and listen to, where we talked about free entry and all the things, the like lack of footfall this year, the season pass pricing. I don't know if you saw, they've been doing an advent calendar online, which is actually pretty good. Every single day you can open a door and you get a new offer from Blackpool Pleasure Beach. Oh. You know, the whole season pass debacle with how much they were charging for a season pass. They've only put it on the advent calendar for £126.
Oh, no.
What a joke. So you don't have to pay 200 odd. Well, you do now. It was only valid for one day, but
You missed it.
You missed it. But yeah, so they did actually bring the season pass back down to a reasonable price, but for one day only. We will watch what they do in 2025 with bated breath. Anyway, moving on to today's episode, we're moving away from Blackpool. We are going over to the other well-loved UK theme park titan. That is Merlin Entertainments. And we're asking, has Merlin lost its magic?
Parkcast.
Now, the reason we're asking this today is obviously there's been a lot of comings and goings and toings and froings and news about Merlin this year. I think all of us are very well acquainted with Merlin. Kip, especially. Now, Kip, just give us a bit of background on you. So you've done a blog for a long, long time, haven't you?
Yeah. I've been blogging since 2008, and I'm like one of the longest standing, because I used to be like a parent blogger, but I sort of covered sort of literally everything. And theme parks has always been a big part of that. you know, I've been going to theme parks for as long as I can remember. I started out like with Pleasurewood Hills. I was probably about four, so like 1985. And yeah, I've just been going to theme parks all up and down the country ever since. And it's sort of stuck with me. And, you know, I take my kids to them. And I've been through a lot of sort of changes in the theme park industry. And, you know, everything was Two Swords. And then, you know, we moved over to Merlin. So yeah, I feel like I'm sort of fairly well equipped and have a good enough memory to sort of remember when there was the magic. And I don't know if it is definitely losing its magic. It certainly feels like it.
One thing to mention before we start this episode, just for some clarity and just to be completely open and honest, you are part of the Alton Towers Creator Programme for 2024. So that was something that Alton Towers kind of advertised for. And was it you just applied for it and said, hey, I want to do some videos for
you? Yeah, yeah. I mean, I applied for it. I hadn't actually been doing tons of theme park content because I had a spinal issue and I basically had a massive growth on my spine that stopped me from walking and just doing anything really. So wow. I'd spent like a couple of years just sort of making content in my studio and not being able to go on rides or anything. So I applied for it, but I did kind of think, oh, you know, I probably won't get in because although I've got a big catalogue of sort of older theme park stuff, I hadn't been more recently. So yeah, I applied for it and I was over the moon when I got in because I love Alton Towers. Alton Towers is my happy place. You know, I will happily go there and just go to the hotel even when the park's shut and just sit in the hotel and have a few drinks in the bar and just take it all in. You know, I really do love Alton Towers. I've been going since I was little and it means a lot to me. So yeah, I'm a big Alton Towers fan. I mean, some of the stuff that's happened recently there. Yeah, but what was good about being a part of the creators program is when we went to the Hex relaunch, that was like the first event I was able to, I met Bianca for the first time. We chatted online quite a bit, but it was really nice to sort of meet her in person. And, you know, she had a few things to say to me about, you know, the comments I'd made. And, but, you know, she understands that we are very passionate people. We love our theme parks. We've got so many long-standing memories with them. So, you know, she gets it. And I sort of felt that when I spoke to her, which was nice. So it was really good to get that opportunity. But she's so, you know, she is good. She will chat to anyone. While we were there, people were coming up to her and bending her ear. And she was very gracious and kind and listened and took it all in. So I think that's really positive because you didn't sort of really get that with the Nick Varney era, you know, Alton Towers. So, you know, it's good that there's a face to it now, I think.
Yeah, I think Kev's definitely in the same camp in terms of Alton Towers, aren't you?
Absolutely. I've got a question though, Kip. It's quite a tricky one. As you are, you know, we're a similar age and grew up at Alton Towers going there. Who do you think ran it better, Two Swords or Merlin? I'm just throwing it out there because because during the 90s, I was a child of the 90s. And sometimes we view it through these kind of rose-tinted glasses. We don't always see maybe the things that were going on at the time. But it is interesting now when you look back, and that's always been my thought, was when we think about Two Swords ran it for a while, then Merlin took it over. What do you think?
I think back when Two Swords were in charge and sort of, you know, before that when John Broome was doing it all, I think it was a bit more magical and it felt less corporate. But then also, you know, you had sort of like KFC and Pizza Hut. And so you did have all these brands there, but also it wasn't so brand orientated. So, you know, there were, I mean, I have very vague memories of the sort of the Swiss cottage tea room that sort of, you know, was there. And it was sort of little things like that. Because I went to Tivoli a couple of weeks ago. And what made me sort of really interested about that was just the number of food places that they had. And they were all different. Like you could get a burger and chips, but they also had like a sit down restaurant where you could get like a 200 euro 10 course taster menu. And I was just thinking, that is mad. But that it did kind of remind me of Alton Towers of old, where it wasn't just Aramark slop. It was just, you know, there was such a wide range of things. So yeah. I think, as you say, you look back at it and you think, oh, I was a child, and, you know, it's sort of, it's all a bit different. But I think also part of the problem is we have so much information now, and like people are looking at the queue times in theme parks, for example, when they're not even there, and stressing about them, and oh my god, this is closed, these rides are closed, because we've got all this information. But I don't necessarily think that the operations are much worse than they used to be, but we just know about it a bit more. It's just up for discussion the whole time. You know, I remember when going there when Nemesis opened for the first time, and we were queuing out of Forbidden Valley, and I went to Air a few days after it opened, and I saw John Wardley there, and that blew my mind. And, you know, that had a massive, like, 2-3 hour queue. And now if people sort of see those things in apps, they're like, oh my god, that's mad, why would you queue that long? But that's just how it's always been. And so, you know, I definitely feel like there was a little bit more magic back in the day, but I think it's difficult, because ultimately, as much as we love them, they are businesses. They've got to make money. They've got to perform. They've got to hit targets and things. So as much as we want them to be magical, they've got to make money or they won't exist.
And they need guests coming back.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's always that thing of you need guests coming back. I've always felt, though, that you're going to get people come back if they get a great experience.
Yes, yeah,
if it's
definitely
run well, if your park is run well, looks clean, looked after and cared for, and you've got immersive theming that makes people go, oh, you know, great rides. And that's what Alton's always done well at as well.
Yeah.
Is it's going to bring people back. And that's ultimately what you need to do. And unfortunately, when you start seeing things like bad operations and, you know, things looking a bit tired, a bit run down, you're not as invested.
No.
And I think that's the difference from what I remember growing up as a kid. Because every time I had a great day, and there were rides that just kind of blew your mind, because I'd not been abroad at that point. So I'd not seen Disney or all these Universal things. I'd only seen what was in the UK. And yeah, Alton Towers ultimately was that pinnacle. But I feel like with Merlin particularly at the minute, looking at other parks in Europe, and particularly because there's a lot of information out there, like you say, you know, enthusiasts now, we can go to Europa Park and Fantasyland and Disneyland, all the places around the world, and we'd come back and go, well, why are these so much better than the Merlin parks? And I think that's where we, I think, as enthusiasts, are now starting to see the cracks, or starting to see the difference.
Yeah, definitely.
Obviously, Merlin is not just Alton Towers, and we do talk about Alton Towers a lot, because obviously, Kev, it's your home park. Kip, you're an Alton Towers content creator. It's just the biggest park, so naturally there's a lot of information about it. Before we get on to some of the other Merlin stuff, let's just cover off some of that Alton Towers stuff that's happened in 2024, because I think it's been a really, really interesting season there, which started with so much positivity. As we talked about, our first episode this year was with John Wardley, and we were talking about Nemesis Reborn and all the excitement and all the hype around it, and how there seemed to be a new dawning of age at Merlin, where things were really going to be taken care of and looked after. And we were really excited about it. And the launch went really well. And then as we went through the season, you know, there was a lot of ride downtime, which, whether it's more or less than before, like you say, you might be right. It's just we hear about it more. There definitely was a disgruntlement amongst public about how much there was when you're spending that much money on a day out. And sometimes you get there and there's three major rides open. And then obviously we've ended the season with what should be a positive, in that we're getting a new flat ride in Forbidden Valley, which is a positive. We can't take that away. But then the little tag onto that is, oh, by the way, we're removing three attractions as well. See you, bye.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That really did annoy me. I was like, oh, this is great. And then obviously, like, on the final day, all the enthusiasts were going, Blade's going. And that rumor's like popped up like pretty much every season that I can remember it. And, you know, because they do dismantle it to do the work on it. So, you know, and when people were talking about that, I was just like, oh yeah, whatever. And then when the announcement came out, I was like, oh God, no, don't do that, guys. Come on. And I mean, I know the Fandango ride that's going isn't isn't great, but it feels like that sort of the world of David Walliams is sort of just gradually being choked and killed, and you know they're sort of pushing people away from that side of the park by sort of getting rid of the dungeons. And I thought the dungeons was great. I think it suffered with the problem that most of the dungeons attractions have, and that is if you've done it once, there's no, like, the next time you do it, it's identical. You know, there's different actors in there. And I thought that if they sort of switched it up each season and changed it, you know, and also probably got rid of the sort of fee to get in.
Yeah, the upcharge.
Yeah.
They would have smashed it. I think that would have been so good. But, you know, I used to go in there sort of a lot because I enjoyed it and I loved the actors, and it was great fun. But once you've done it once or twice, you're just like, well, I know what's coming now. And I think it just needed some changes each season, some different scenes and things, and that would have been great, and that could have stayed there for years if they just kept on innovating it. But they sort of spent all this money doing it and then were like, oh, okay, yes, it's no one's really going to, oh well, bye.
Yeah,
and then, a lot of it was scripted, similar to the other dungeons as well.
Yes,
Kit, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
So if you've done other, like if you've been to York and you've done the dungeons up there, there's a lot of bits that are scripted very similar.
Yeah, and I think, and also, you know, I think they could have really capitalized on the fact that it's in a historic venue, and you know they could have really, really run with that, but they didn't, and that's the sort of. That's the kind of thing that doesn't feel very magical. It's so frustrating. And I know it's really easy for us as sort of people who don't have any financial interest in the park to go, well, they should do this, they should do that. But I mean, some of it they could do and they should do. And it's just frustrating when there's just going to be that whole area of the park. I mean, I don't know how long the David Walliams contract has got left. I reckon maybe it will probably be changing sort of, I reckon it will go at the end of this, well, the 2025 season, I imagine, and might become something else. But several times I went to that area of the park this year and it was just dead. And it's such a shame. They've thrown everything at CBeebies Land, which is great. But I just wish that, I don't know. I just think that area is so good. And, you know, they've got a whole theatre building there that just sat empty. And you're just like, oh, come on, guys, come on.
Do something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
It's never felt finished. That's the problem with that area. Because you've also got the driving school, but that's like Cloud Cuckoo driving school. So that's not even a part of the David Walliams thing either. And with the dungeon, it never felt right. So you've got the dungeons there. You've then got David Walliams. There's Cloud Cuckoo driving school. And it never felt like it was a complete...
It wasn't cohesive, was it?
Yeah. No.
And unless they're doing that thing of they're planning, still planning Project Horizon.
We can hope.
Yeah, but they've got they've literally got a whole entire water ride just sat there.
Yeah.
That could be incredible. You know, you could have another world-class dark ride, and then they just used it for a bit of the dungeon, which was good and interesting, and the sort of... You know, like the London Dungeon's got a fairly mediocre water ride in it, which is pretty good. But, you know, they've got this whole ride system there, just sitting there. And you're like, in an area where they're sort of trying to focus it on children. And it is and frustrating. It's really hard.
So you've got a mixture of what was Toyland Tours, then Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, now the dungeons. You've got three very separate things that have all been tried to fit into one attraction. You're right, Kit. I really hope that they can... use the whole building for its whole full potential.
Yeah, exactly. That would be great.
We talk about it, the dungeons maybe failing, the upcharge probably being quite a big element of that. I think once you've paid that much to go into Alton Towers, if you're not a season pass holder, the last thing on your mind is, I'm going to spend a bit more money and spend a bit more time doing something else whilst I'm in this park. Do you think that contributes to this whole Merlin losing his magic feeling? It's that feeling of being a little bit ripped off. You feel like you're spending a lot of money.
Yeah, I do. I do in some regards, like, especially when it comes to, like, eating at a theme park.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, I'm really lucky in that, you know, I am a pass holder. I sort of essentially make money by going to theme parks and making content. And so, you know, it's almost like a business expense for me.
Yeah.
And but then I sort of think of all the people that are sort of going in family mode, and they might just get like one trip a year. And, you know, it's like a really big thing. And like when you see them advertising, like sort of, they had, I'm sure it was around Scarefest or something, they had like, I don't eat them because I'm a vegetarian, but they had these big stupid like burgers that were like nearly 20 quid.
Yeah.
And it's just like, yeah, you don't really need those, you know. And the sort of prices of the sort of basic meals are just flying up so high. And I think I might understand it if you went to these places and you ate it and you're like, this is the best food I've had in a theme park in a long time. But it just isn't. It's really depressing. Like when I went to go on Curse for the first time, I had got one of those black ice cream things that they sell next to them, and I sort of thought, oh yeah, this is good, let's take a nice picture for Instagram. And then I tasted it and I was like, the waffle cone just tasted like a stale ice cream cone, and the sort of ice cream was all sort of bitty, and it was just like, oh man, I've paid a lot of money for this.
Yeah.
And I think if the prices were high and the quality was good, you'd sort of let it slide. But when, you know, they're sort of serving food, and this isn't just Alton Towers, you know, this is all of them, they're all the Merlin parks are guilty of this, just terrible food. And it's just so sad. And it even extends to staying in the hotel. We went and stayed in the hotel.
Yeah, fully agree.
For my birthday, and like the breakfast was just so sad. It made me sad. And you know, I kind of felt bad because my wife had bought me like the stay there as a present. And you know, when you go to a hotel, you want an amazing breakfast to start the day. But because I've been going there for years and years, I can just see the quality just sliding down. And you just, I mean, you can just sit, imagine these big sort of industrial vats of baked beans that they throw out there.
Yeah.
And it's just, oh, it is sad. But again, I've seen so many people going, oh, I'm having to take a packed lunch now because I can't afford it.
Yeah, we do the same.
And that depresses me so much, because theme parks are meant to be a treat. They're meant to be a sort of, you know, but when you're having to pay like really extortionate amounts of money for food and you're not really getting quality, I get that now. And
obviously all the Merlin parks are under this Aramark contract. So that's what is causing this. They are the sole providers of food. And we're talking about Merlin losing its magic. So Aramark, we've got to say are contributing to that.
Oh, massively, massively. Yeah. I think that is probably one of the worst things that Merlin ever did. You know, getting them on board for the food is just so sad and depressing. And it just brings every aspect of the park down, you know. And I know people sort of moaned about there being sort of like KFC and Burger King and Pizza Hut, but you kind of know what you're getting there.
Yeah.
You know that you can go to a Burger King and get the same food that you'd get in pretty much any Burger King. There's sort of like a consistent quality, but the consistent quality around all the Aramark food is just it's terrible.
Yeah.
And then you've got to think, well, I might want to buy some merch. I want to get some on-ride photos. What I really loved about Tivoli, which was blew my mind, was if you downloaded the Tivoli app, you could scan the QR code and get your photo for free.
What a concept. Don't tell me you could park there for free as well.
Well, yeah, it's just that just blew my mind. It was like, you know, you didn't have to pay for a pass or anything like that. You could pay for a printout if you wanted to, but I don't think that's so much of a thing these days. But yeah, just scan a QR code. It's in the app. They get your data by you using their app, but you get your photos. And I think little things like that could go a long way in bringing the magic back, because you look at a ride photo and you think, oh, that's pretty cool, I like that. You know, you're not going to like frame it and put it on your wall, but it's a nice memory to have. And you sort of go, oh, but do I really want to spend that much on a photo pass to get that? I don't really want to carry a printout round with me. You know, so little things like that can make a whole lot of difference.
I mean, I will give Merlin one credit in that, like say, about the merchandise is better
Yes,
from what I
definitely.
remember. You know,
Yes.
so the merchandise, although again, expensive, you know, if you want to pay £12-15 for a mug, I mean, there's still things I do struggle with. Like, I do love the pin badges, and I would be someone that I would always get pin badges, but they're like £8.
Yeah.
Like, whereas before you'd have enough, you know, if you wanted to get quite a few, you would. But now it's kind of like, well, I might get one or
yeah.
two.
Yeah.
So the
It soon
pricing
ramps
of
up.
stuff is a bit nuts, you
Yeah.
know. And if you've been to parks like Disney and you look at their merchandise, yes, it's expensive, but the quality of some of the stuff you know is a lot better.
Well, how did Disney get it so right? So you go to Disney, you know you're going to pay a load for the food in the park, but it's like themed, it's good quality, it's expensive, but you're in that Disney bubble. You're like, yeah, but I'm at Disney, I'm going to buy these Mickey waffles and they're going to cost me 20 quid. And I'm kind of okay with that. But it doesn't seem to work at Merlin. It doesn't have this.
No.
If someone was like, you can have this Nemesis waffle and it's 20 quid, you'd be like, absolutely not. Although they've got those donuts, haven't they, at the bottom of
Yes.
Tower Street. And they're like about £8 for a donut, like ride themed. And you're just like, nah, I'm not doing it. How can Disney create this kind of atmosphere where you're like, I don't care. I'm at Disney. I'm going to spend that money. I don't care how much it is.
I think
you
like
don't
you
feel that.
I think like you say, with the sort of the Disney stuff, they've gone that sort of step further and it is themed to where you are. And so you look at the food and you think, well, I'm not going to get this anywhere else in the world. And then you look at like the sad menus in the chicken places and you're like, well, I could go anywhere and get this. I could go to some really dodgy, shady takeaway and get probably something tastier than this. You know, I think if they took it to the next level and had things like that and had sort of a lot more themed stuff and they sort of really thought about it, people wouldn't mind. But when it's just, you know, it gets to Halloween and they're like, oh, well, let's just get some black buns and call it a vampire burger or something.
It's
And
when
you're
they're
just
like,
like,
they're freaky fries. And I'm like, what's freaky about them? They just look like chips to me.
I think because Disney's a 365 park, they have to maintain that level of standard for an entire year.
Yeah.
If you go at Christmas at Disney, I still want the same level of experience that I might get in February or March, or even in the August summer months. And what I've found with a lot of Merlin parks, again, I'm not picking at towers here, it's across a lot of them. You go at the start of the season, everything feels great. Everything looks fresh, everything looks fantastic. Food, like I say, is not great, but there's, you know, there's all different things, merchandise, there's everything there, and, you know, all look at all the shiny new stuff. And I find normally when we get to about September, October time, that's when it starts to feel like nothing is new is being still put in. We put all the new stuff at the beginning of the season. And as it gets towards the end, we start, you know, seeing
losing
less and
stuff,
less of
really.
This and this. Things are, you know, not working. Whereas at Disney, it's all year round. You know, they want you to have that magical experience whenever you go.
Yeah.
And the problem is, and I've done this before with people I work with, I will, you know, I work with German gap year students as part of my job, and they come over from Germany, and I always take them to Alton Towers because, you know, we go to theme parks. And
it's on work time, Kev.
Well, yeah,
it's a field trip.
But the point is, like, I always take them in like March, April at the start of the season, and that's specifically mainly because I want them to see it at the start of the season. And that's just the way that I think. I'm thinking, well, I don't really want to take them at this time of year because by this point it all looks tired. And you
it's
know,
bad
so
that you have to think that though.
But that's where we're at with it.
I mean, Kev's mentioned on this podcast quite a few times about the Trommel Tunnel in Cursivore Manor. Like, that's his big thing.
Oh, yeah.
That not working. Do we think it's going to be fixed for 2025?
I really hope so. I mean, you know, they threw so much money at Curse, and when it's all working, it is just so good, and I love it. And I got invited to like the sort of the marketing campaign where they built like a doll's house in the middle of a field in London.
Oh, yeah.
And I was so happy and excited about that because, again, you know, I remember going on the haunted house on the year it opened, and
amazing.
You know, I've gradually sort of seen it change and everything. And then when it came back as Curse, I was a bit worried, but I was like, no, they've absolutely smashed this. I'm really happy with it. And then, like, one of my last trips there, the trommel was broken. I was like, oh, you idiots, come on. Come on. This is like, this is, but you know, they don't seem to be able to fix a trommel, because like there's the one in Toon Blaster at Chessington, and that sort of, I can't remember the last time I saw that working. And it's just little things like that. You just think, oh, guys, come on.
Where is the money going though? Because if it's not going on the maintenance, then it's going on big new investments, which, you know, we can't fault them this year. We had Nemesis Reborn, we had Hyperia. These are two massive financial undertakings.
trying to reopen Hex as well.
Hex.
They do, you know, they have thrown a lot of money at the new rides, but even with Hyperia, you know, there was a sort of whole kind of, the plaza was meant to be a lot bigger, there was meant to be sort of more water stuff, and that all got kind of stripped back. But then if we look back to sort of when Air came about, that was meant to have a lot
more
stuff.
I know what you're
going to
say.
And that all suddenly disappeared.
Air tunnel klaxon.
Yeah. Alert.
But, you know, and there was meant to be a bit more sort of theming. I think they were meant to have some water stuff as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it does happen. But when you've got a massive company with shareholders, ultimately, that's really where the money's going. And it's like any business, you know, you sort of, like water companies, for example, you know, sort of the water network's terrible, but the shareholders are sleeping nicely at night. They don't care. So it's just business, and it's really rubbish, and I hate it. But I think, you know, I think with all these problems, you've got to look right at the top, you know. People look at Bianca and, you know, not so much the other sort of directors for the other parks, because they sort of hide, basically. But, you know, we sort of look at Bianca, but I think the problem is higher. And that's the same with sort of most companies. And I think that is where the issues lie, because I spoke to Bianca and she had so much passion, and I was like, okay, yeah, you get it. But it's the people above her.
You.
I don't think they do. I mean, you know, that's how I feel. And I think that might be right, maybe.
I think what they've managed to do with Bianca is they managed to give her a bit of that freedom.
Yeah.
And you can see that in the last few years with the investment at Towers, particularly, giving her that freedom. I remember her saying about when they did the press thing for Curse of Alta Manor, and the park set up all the lighting in the graveyard, and they set up the smoke machine. Apparently that was only set up just for that. And from what I heard, Bianca told them, why are you taking it down? And they were like, oh, well, because it was, you know, it was just for the press event.
Mm.
And she was like, no, I want that up and I want that running throughout the whole season, because it adds to the atmosphere.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I feel like what she did that worked really well was seeing things like that, that maybe other corporate people might not see. They see it as in, oh, fancy press thing. Let's just take it down now, because that's going to cost money to keep that running.
Yeah.
But what I liked about her was seeing that and saying, no, because what that does, it creates an immersive theme, feeling in the actual, in the graveyard.
It's
that feeling. And they could have got rid of it. And I think that's what past Merlin would have got rid of stuff like that. Unfortunately, now, if there are financial issues, that might happen again.
I think back, like, really old, going back to old Chessington and the Fifth Dimension, and even Bubbleworks, for example, those rides were kind of left to rot. You know, there were times where sort of an over-enthusiastic ride tech would obviously probably spend out of hours time fixing up things, and just sort of for the love of it, just to get it working. And, you know, you'd see some things come back to life. And even like the organist in the Vampire at Chessington, he was broken for ages or not fully working. Is it just a Merlin thing? I don't know. It's a tricky one, really, because you sort of say these things and then they sort of trigger memories of like how horrible Bubbleworks was by the end of it. And like with Professor Burp, I remember in the finale, like his some of his clothes were like hanging off a bit. You know, it looked like he was starting to do a striptease.
Yeah.
And you just kind of think that would have just taken someone a couple of hours to go and do something and sort it out. But I think, as you say, sometimes people, they make these rides, they make the investment, and then it's like, okay, let's
What's
go.
The next thing?
Yeah, yeah. Let's focus elsewhere. And I don't think it's the staff that are a problem. I think they want to make sure everything works and looks good. But if they're being told, no, we've got to do this now, they can only do as they're told.
We're talking about higher managers. Obviously, at the end of November, the CEO, Scott O'Neill of Merlin, he said he was stepping down. Not clear if that was a personal decision or if he was asked to step down. But obviously, that's happened for a reason. And I think what's quite interesting is when you look through some of the financials, this is for 2023, because obviously 2024 kind of hasn't been published yet. But they had record revenues in 2023. They had £2.1 billion worth of revenue, and yet their CEO has stepped aside in 2024. Now, generally, when a company is getting record revenues, you don't get your CEO to step aside, because you're kind of like, well, he's doing what we want him to do.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting to me. Like, why is this guy stepping aside? Although they had these revenues, they did also have massive pre-tax losses as well. That was like $214 million. This was in 2023, so we don't know what the state is yet for 2024, but that kind of gives you an idea of what they were going into the year with.
Yeah.
So this CEO is stepping aside. We're going to get someone now new coming in. Like, there's an interim woman doing it at the moment, but she's not necessarily going to be doing it long term. So then you get a brand new CEO come in. What are they going to... Are they going to start from scratch? To me, that this is just throwing the whole company back up into a bit of disarray of, well, what's his or her strategy going to be when they are taking over as CEO? Is it going to be, no, we're investing in our product and our attractions and our theming, or no, we are simply looking at the bottom line and we'll do whatever it takes to max that out?
Yeah, I think something really needs to be done, because I was thinking about it a few years ago. I took my son for a Santa sleepover at Alton Towers, and that used to be like the hottest ticket in town. Like, as soon as they put the dates out, they just got booked up instantly. And when we went, there was such little sort of space available. We actually had to get the Smiler Suite in the hotel because there weren't any other rooms, and we really wanted to take him on this particular day because it was sold out.
A great night's sleep. Every time I see that room, I'm like, who's sleeping in that?
Yeah, like when he needed a wee in the night, I had to get him up, and then like the Smiler theme tune plays every time you flush the toilet. You know, it's never fun walking into the bathroom and there's something laughing at you.
No.
But this year, like, I'm still getting like the Merlin annual pass emails, like, come to Santa's sleepover. Yeah. It's like, guys, it's like normally booked out, but you're still needing people to go there. So I feel like they're obviously struggling to get people there. So they do need to make some changes. But one simple change would just be open some rides. Like, I would happily go and give them my money and go and stay in the hotel and have a nice little pre-Christmas break. But I don't want to go in CBeebies Land. It looks creepy, a man of my age walking around CBeebies Land. You know, I want to go on a few, you know, if they just open like Hex, Spinball Whizzer, maybe Wicker Man, you can have a great old time.
Yeah.
But they're sort of just cutting off this entire revenue stream of sort of people with older children or people without children who don't necessarily want to go and go on Go-Jetters. You know, it's just...
A great ride.
Yeah. But you do look a bit weird if you're a fully grown adult on it on your own.
Up, down.
There we go. Because we went to Chessington, and actually we really enjoyed Chessington last year at Christmas. But I think that was because, like you said, there was quite a decent number of things open. So like Mandrill Mayhem.
Yeah, they're going to open this year as well.
Like, we managed, because it wasn't that busy.
Yeah.
So I think me and my daughter managed to do Mandrill Mayhem like four times, I think, in that day.
Yeah.
Over Christmas. And it was, you know, really festive. We had a lovely day at Chessington last year. We don't go to Alton, even though it's our closest park. We tend to go other places like Drayton Manor.
Drayton Manor,
at Christmas. And we haven't even bothered with towers this year. And that's simply because I looked at what was open. I was like,
it's
not really bothered.
But just simple things like that could just make a whole difference, and they could fill up those slots no problem, I'm sure of it. But they've just got this weird obsession with just keeping CBeebies land open, and that's it. But yeah, like Chessington, they are trying a little bit harder, and I think even like a sort of Thorpe Park Christmas thing would be great. They've got so many rides there, they could run some of the flats, they could maybe open Hyperia or one of the big rides, and that would be amazing. But they just sort of pull back. And I know it's obviously cost money to open parks and have the rides running and things like that, but you know, people are going to go, well, I might just go, I'll go to Tivoli and have a very nice Christmas over there, thank you very much, and spend my money there, and you know, probably pay more for the food and more for the drink than I would in the UK. But you're like, oh, it's Christmas, I'm going to walk around with some nice mulled wine and go on some rides. But we just don't really seem to do that. And I know these parks want to sort of shift to a 365 operation. But if what they're offering out of the sort of main season is so dire and just so very limited on who can go, I just don't know if it will ever work. I think this is the kind of stuff that if you're in charge of Merlin, you really need to think about who are your customers. They're not just people with toddlers, you know?
Yeah.
So you want to keep people coming back year on year on year, making traditions. And that's the sort of getting the returning revenue is really important, but they just don't seem to want to.
It's weird because you certain rides you could open. I know, again, it's staffing, but Hex, great for Christmas time. Not because of the
indoors.
Theme. Christmas tree. Chain Christmas tree. But because it's indoors.
Yeah.
So Old Manor, you could open World of David Williams, Gangster Granny.
Yeah.
You know, obviously can't open 13 because we know that doesn't operate under the, like, 4 degrees. But there's so many options there that you could. And I would go if I knew that those dark rides were open.
Yeah.
And like you say, if Wicker Man, Spimble was open last year. So that's random why it's not this year. But if you've got certain rides open, I would want to go back again because I don't like the closed season because I'm not spending time at the places that I love the most.
Yeah, you can have big on Christmas markets and things like that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
People selling stuff, local sellers.
But they've done that, haven't they? Sure, the Alton Towers at one point, a couple of years ago, that lawn was covered in like market stalls. It wasn't Merlin. It was people who brought their own things.
Yeah.
And it's just, I find it weird that we built up, and this seems to happen a lot, we build up to something, we're getting progress with the way things are run, we're seeing these really great positive things happening, and then it's just suddenly taken away again.
Yeah.
Obviously, I don't know if you ever went to the Bear Grylls adventure at the NEC in Birmingham.
That was in my bad back era. That was.
I did go there. I was working at a radio station at the time in Birmingham, and we were part of the launch campaign for that. And we kind of went and did a load of stuff with them. It was like a morning out, really. Like you couldn't spend a whole day there, and it was fairly pricey for what it was. And I'm never going to criticize them for trying to do something different because if it worked. Brilliant. And it's more revenue into the company, which can go to the bits that we like, which is the theme parks. But the bit that I don't like is them doing this Bear Grylls experience. So at the time, Bear Grylls was quite a character and he was, you know, quite well loved and well known. Now his star's kind of fallen a little bit. It's like kind of like, who's Bear Grylls? He's a name that I know, but I don't really feel anything for him. And then you've got this attraction named after him. And it's failing. And a part of that is going to be because it's the Bear Grylls. That doesn't make me feel anything. I don't want to go there. You know, tell me why I should go there.
It's a bit like the World of David Williams.
Exactly.
You know?
Darren Brown's Ghost Train is another one that comes to mind.
I think David Williams especially, obviously because he had that sort of thing where he was swearing about people on X Factor and that sort of all coincided with when his world was opening.
Yeah.
I think the thing is with investing in IPs like that, they only have a very limited life. And once that sort of life is over, I mean, I don't think kids are probably reading David Williams books in the way that they used to. I mean, you know, my my son really liked Diary of a Wimpy Kid and Tom Gates and things like that, but he never really liked David Walliams. But obviously there are going to be other kids who feel like that. So by having those kind of IPs, you're limiting yourself to a very limited audience to start mm-hmm. with. Because I went on the Gangster Granny ride and I thought, well, it's cool. It's a dark ride. I love dark rides. But I just didn't, it didn't make me feel anything.
Yeah.
And like, if we're the, I remember like when I used to go on the Bubble Works, that's a completely made up character. They, they made this glorious IP of their own and it was incredible. And every time from when I was a child, even to when it was in its rubbish Imperial Leather days, every time I went down that fountain bit and ended up in the final scene,
it just
sort of made me feel something.
Yeah.
And it just made me so happy because it was so magical. And I think they really need to look at making their own IPs and stuff
They're
like
so
that again,
good
having
at
their
it.
Own characters.
Well, Nemesis has probably is one of its most iconic.
Exactly.
Because Nemesis of Terror, although not the best dark ride, but what is great is having a dark ride based on a roller coaster that's completely their own, I'd say John Wardley, you know, creation almost. And we even had Nemesis Inferno.
Yeah.
At Thorpe Park. We had to name a coaster at Thorpe Park after one at Alton Towers because how do we get people to come and ride this coaster? Because it's not got 10 inversions like Colossus did. So let's name it after Nemesis and that'll bring people in.
But even things like the Smiler, the branding on that is so good.
Yeah.
And, you know, when they do it well, they do it incredibly well. But I do think I think they need to turn away from just like getting a celebrity sticking a label on something, because like I actually quite liked the Ghost Train as it was, and I went on it sort of with the actors in it as in its sort of new iteration, and I was just like, the actors are doing really well, but like it didn't really feel very cohesive to me or make much sense. And it was just clear that they were like, well, we built this big flipping train now, we've got to do something with it, and they just sort of tried to cram a story in with what they had and it didn't work. And I think that might happen when the world of David Walliams goes. I mean, what are they going to do with that dark ride? They're going to have to rip everything out because
you can't, you know, really retheme it, can you?
Exactly. But you know, even you think back to like Toyland Tours, that wasn't its own IP, but that was an amazing dark ride and so creative. Yeah. And they had sort of modern toys in there. There was like a Sega bit where they
the
had
Sonic bit.
The
I loved it. I was, what, eight? I think in 94. Yeah. So I remember going to Toyland Tours, 8 year old, be like, oh, Sonic, it's amazing.
Yeah. And so that was a great way of putting in an IP into something, but it didn't overtake the whole ride.
That's interesting, though, because obviously their latest IP announcement is Minecraft. And that they're going to put Minecraft into various parks worldwide, which I've already said I'm kind of very much in the non-IP camp because it dates so quickly and I don't see longevity in it really, unless it's really, really big and really cool. But yeah, how do we feel about Minecraft coming to Merlin?
I'm just sad about what they're doing to Chessington. Kip, do you feel like Chessington, I know hopefully we'll get to do an episode about IPs because it's really interesting.
Yeah.
Don't you feel like Chessington's identity is over the last however many years with Merlin has changed from what it was or was becoming?
Yeah, I do. I do, actually. I mean, obviously you had a sort of big IP there in Beano Land, but again, that dated quite quickly. I think Minecraft does have a bit more staying power because it has been around for quite some time. I mean, my eldest played it when they were little, and there's sort of like a 10-year age gap between them and my son. And so, you know, it has been around for a very long time. And also the movie's coming out next year, I think. So again, that will give that a push. But yeah, I think sometimes it's like after the IP has faded, what happens? I think they're all very keen on, you know, getting the big names and going, yeah, you can go on a Minecraft roller coaster, et cetera, et cetera. But it's just when it all fades. I mean, it's like, it's like Chessington with the sort of Julia Donaldson things. You know, I went on the Gruffalo this year and like lots of the cool effects were sort of broken, and I was like, oh no, don't let this turn into what the Bubbleworks was, you know. So it is hard. I think if they're going to go for these IPs, they've got to like properly run with them and keep them up running and looking good and everything like that. But if they just go, oh well, that brand's pulling out next year, let's just leave it. It'll be all right.
Yeah. But I think with Minecraft, it's like a lot of things. So if we look at Universal with Wizarding World, Harry Potter. So when they did that, it came out like so many years after the last films had come out. But I think because Harry Potter is so ingrained into our pop culture.
Yeah.
Things like Star Wars, for example, as well, is another one where things are so ingrained into our culture and our the things that I think a lot of people get passionate about. Some things aren't going to go away. Things like Minecraft, or like you say, has been, I think it's 15 years actually. And it could potentially be that maybe Merlin strike with this idea of Minecraft. It's such a basic game, even 15 years ago. It was like so basic, but yet it had this really, the popularity of it was massive, and I suppose it still is. And maybe that's, you know.
I think if you pick it right, like with Minecraft could be, then I think they are onto a winner. But it just, I think relying on other people's stuff isn't the best way forward. They can create their own world, and they won't have to pay licensing costs. All the money that they could invest in sort of brilliant graphic artists and designers and things would be a lot, but I imagine they're paying a fair few quid to all these people to have like their names and sort of IPs stamped everywhere.
It'll be so much, exactly. And then you hear the news about them shutting like Merlin Magic Making North, which was their sort of facility.
Oh, God, that's horrible. Yeah,
in
I hate
Stoke
that.
Around Alton Towers. And I lived in Stoke-on-Trent for 5 years. And there's not a lot of jobs like that around there. So if you're highly skilled, highly specialist in making scenery, theming, props, what a waste to lose that in-house production facility. And I get it. They're going to say, well, it makes more sense if we just get it sent from someone else and they make it for all of us and all our Merlin parks. But you're detaching the park from it a little bit. And I think that's where you lose the magic. That's that magic bit.
Yeah. And we're going to lose those special people.
They go to those theme parks.
I know from conversations I've had with people, like people who worked on, say, Curse of Alton Manor, like the people who created the Emily Alton, you know, figurines throughout the attraction, like people like that who is, you know, particularly employed to do that, you know, and sadly, you know, you're going to get people who are, you know, losing their jobs, and you're just going to get generic people to come in to do those sorts of things.
Yeah.
And not specialized in theming.
No, I mean, but like, for example, when I went to Chessington this season, I was absolutely blown away by how good it's looking. They have worked, like the creatives there and the scenic artists and everything there have been so good at keeping on top of making everything look really, really good. And I love to see stuff like that where the detail is being tended to, you know, but it could be like a maintenance thing, because it's the rides that seem to be lacking in the sort of maintenance and the upkeep and things like that. But then again, you know, they sort of went mad with the vampire, and they didn't have to bring back all the chandeliers and, you know, sort out the music and stuff like that. But they're doing things like that. But then if the rides aren't running properly, or they're sort of not caring about all the rides equally, it's just a bit of a disparity, and it's very frustrating.
Just before we kind of wrap this up, but I just wanted to go back to Hex, because obviously you were one of the first on it as part of the Alton Towers Creator Programme. Kev's a massive Hex fan, massive Dark Ride fan. What were your thoughts on Hex? First of all, did you think it was going to reopen in 2024? Were you like, we were on this podcast saying it's not even going to happen, and then the next day they said it was going to happen?
No, well, so a bit of background. After the announcement of the Scarefest lineup, I put a video out and it upsets quite a few people, where I basically sort of said that they were being a little bit lazy with it all, and having Hex open for it would have been, you know, a massive win. And I did end up having to eat my words, and I actually apologized to Bianca for what I'd said, because they got it open. They got it open, and you know, obviously it had that sort of issue the following day. But yeah, I went there and I really loved it. I think I just missed out on like when it opened and having the very original pre-show. I'm really annoyed I never got to see that like all those years ago. But I've heard
remember,
like the
I
audio.
I do remember seeing it, Kip.
Yeah, and
yeah, it's really
but
funny
so
now.
it does mean a lot to me, that ride. And like I went when I went in there and we went into the queue line, and like they had sort of the old queue line videos and everything still playing, and they'd obviously done some restoration and upscaled them for modern displays. It was just great to see that. And I think really they have done a very, very good job. I was speaking to John Burton about it, and he said that he came in like right at the last minute to sort of have a little look over it, and he made some creative suggestions. And I think they have done an incredible job with it. I really love what they've done, and I like that they've sort of thought about it as a future investment, and that they've spent a lot of cash in making sure that it runs for another 20 years. I think my only like was the branch. Just they've gone a bit over the top with
Christmas
it.
Christmas themed. Hey,
yeah, exactly.
Bringing Hex for a Christmas ride.
I think if they'd have kept the original sort of fiber optic twinkly lights in it, that would have been, and reinstated those, that would have been absolutely perfect. But the fact that it was sort of very garish, that was my only sort of real criticism. I just didn't like that bit of it. I liked the light effect that they have right at the end. You know, I know that divided a lot of people.
what was it you called it, Kev?
Light. Disco ball light.
Yeah,
we're underwater. Why are we underwater?
I kind of like that. It was just like a nice little flourish at the end. But no, I was really impressed with it, and it actually made me quite happy to hear the sort of soundtrack booming through the speakers again. The branch aside, I was really happy with it, and I'm not saying that as a suck up Alton Towers content creator, because I know some of the other fellow content creators weren't as kind about it, but if I thought it was terrible, I would say that, because ultimately me being a content creator is for them isn't going to last forever, and I'd rather leave that program with my dignity and honesty rather than being a corporate suck up.
No, very fair, very admirable. Yep. As well. That's good. I think Kev didn't like the disco ball effect, did you? But apart from that,
I just felt like I was happy. Similar to you, Kip. It was like all the way through, I was like, oh, that everything's lit up really well. There's, you know, improvements on this and that. But I felt really immersed in it.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too.
It was really good. And particularly during Scarefest, because it was dark outside. So it was, the whole thing felt really immersive. And that's what I wanted from these Alton Towers dark rides, was just that feeling. Again, you're away from everything else. I just felt like I think the lighting worked really well, and then up to that point it was like they've just gone nuts.
Yeah.
Basically
that's where all the budget's gone for Merlin. It's in the Hex vault.
It just lost something for me, that was all, Kip. It was just, I think up until that point it was going really well, and then it just felt like it's gone too far.
Yeah, but again, because they've got like a modern lighting system in there now, they can tweak that. It's just a few sort of sliders on a computer screen. Mm-hmm. So, you know, hopefully they've got the technology now to sort of tweak it a little bit, rather than them being sort of fixed lights that they can't do anything with. So hopefully we might see some changes, and sort of they might take feedback into account, hopefully.
Yeah. I think your sentence there pretty much sums up the entire episode. Hopefully we might see some changes. Cheers. And they'll take some feedback into
it. Do they listen to our feedback?
When we're talking about, in conclusion, has Merlin lost its magic? What are we saying?
I would say yes in some ways, but we need to think back to how things were in the past, and they weren't always as magical as we remember.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think from 2018 onwards, and obviously we had a pandemic as well, we've got to remember that this hit everybody very hard in terms of, you know, financially. I think we'd seen a lot of progress in the way that Merlin are operating their parks and hiring people who are passionate about it. So hiring people like Bianca for Alton Towers was genius in one way, because what you're doing is you're getting people invested and giving people an immersive experience and not just trying to take the cash. So I think whatever's happened, I think it's hopefully fixable. And Merlin keep looking at, well, let's look at what's been progressing well and how can we keep that going. And like you say, Kip, there was a time where Two Swords were putting rides like Spinball Wizard and Rita at Alton Towers, which didn't look permanent. They weren't secret weapon rides. They were kind of just put there with no real thought at all. So, yeah, absolutely. There have been mistakes on the way.
Yeah, just get better food, guys.
Just
sort the food out. Yeah, I think for me, I think it's lost a bit of magic. I'm not going to sit on the fence so much. I don't think it's great at the moment. I don't get the feeling when I walk into a Merlin park that I get when I walk into somewhere like Efteling or Fantasialand. And that's that I am being taken away from my reality into this really special place. I don't get that so much anymore. And the one place where you always kind of get that is Alton Towers, just because of its natural beauty. Like, and no theme park consortium will ever be able to destroy what Alton Towers has there. It just guts me a little bit that I don't get that same fuzzy warm feeling as I used to quite as much, because, and I think that it's because I feel like I'm being ripped off a little bit. I don't like getting ripped off. And so I think for me, if it's just getting that value for money a little bit more, if I feel like I'm not just being taken for cash at every opportunity, everywhere I turn in the theme park, even if I am, if I don't feel like I am, that will make for a better experience. So it's maybe how they can do that in a bit more of a subtle way, and definitely a bit more of a clever way. And all of that, the food definitely plays into it. I'm a big foodie as well. And I don't want to be paying 15 quid for it.
I think it sort of leads on from what you were saying. Just tone down the, I'm trying to take your money at every opportunity. You know, I don't necessarily want to walk into a theme park and trip over someone who's trying to sell me a freestyle cup, or like shove some information about buying my digital photos in my face. You know, I just want to go there and look, like walk out into the entrance of Alton Towers and just see that view down Towers Street. And I don't want like just a million and one ways to empty my wallet just ahead of me. I just want to take it all in and enjoy it. And the same with all the other parks, they're exactly the same. It's just like, oh, would you like to spend some money now? I'm gonna have to pay to park here. I don't, you know,
let's not even talk about that. The signs have gone down for the Alton Towers parking, which can only mean one thing.
they're getting rid of it, obviously.
Well, yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's obviously just what's happening.
I just want a bit less open your wallet and just a bit more reliability in the rides that I've gone there to ride, because like I said earlier, there will be people who only go there once a year and that is it. And if you've got like your biggest coasters all down for a lot of the day, it just makes them have a rubbish time and not want to come back. And, you know, we are the people that will always go back because we're nerds and we'll moan about it, but we'll always be there. But it's those people who go, well, we spent all this money and we had a terrible time. Let's go to Disney, spend more money, but we'll get on most things.
Yeah. Have a better time. Very fair. Kip, thank you so much for coming on the podcast with us today. Just remind me about where we can find you and what we'll find you doing on your channel.
Oh, you just like type in my name. You'll find me everywhere. I'm a parasite.
The place
I'm literally
you least
everywhere.
Expect.
Yeah, no, I mostly sort of make stuff on YouTube. I do all sorts of videos. I do sort of theme park stuff. I do travel stuff. I repair technology on that table behind me. You know,
it's a good man cave.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I love it. So, yeah, I just do a lot of stuff and it's not necessarily all concentrated on theme parks. It's about what I'm doing and, you know, my way through life being an old man in a modern world.
Whoa. We're a very similar age here. Let's not go stroking us with that broad brush. We're millennials. We're in our prime.
Yeah, true.
And your Alton Towers content creation stuff, where are we going to see that? Is that popping up on your channel?
Yeah, that'll just be, I reckon, I think they're just sort of basically inviting us to events, and then we sort of make our own content based on those events. That's certainly how it worked with the Hex stuff. So hopefully we might see some behind the scenes and sort of early looks at things. But to be fair to them, the sort of whole scheme is in its infancy. And I think us lot are the first year doing it. It's sort of testing the waters. So, you know, but I have been told that there is a package coming for me.
Oh,
a little bit of an exclusive. And I don't know what that is. So I imagine I'll be unboxing some kind of magical package from Alton Towers on my socials at some point soon.
Is it going to be top spin related, do we think?
I'd love that, but it might just be some baubles that they want rid of.
It Who might knows? Be. It could be Aramark's food leftovers. Happy Christmas.
Stale Scarefest cookie. I'm sure it won't be.
Here's a Stein from Oktoberfest. Happy Christmas.
I'm looking forward to it, and I'm quite intrigued, but we'll see. But yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing, because, you know, it's the first year. Hopefully we'll get some sort of exclusive stuff on the new ride, maybe. I don't know. I hope so. That'd be cool. But yeah, we'll see. But everything that I do will be, no matter what social channel you're on, I'm there. Sadly,
whether you like it or not,
or hate me, I'm there. So, yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on and joining us. Before you go, we've just got one more question for you.
Just gotta ride it.
So whenever we have a guest on the podcast, we've got to ask them this. It's just got to ride it. And it's the part of the podcast where we say, if all the roller coasters in the world were about to be destroyed and you could only save one, which one would you save and why would you save it?
Oh, dear. That's tricky, man.
We're not here to be easy.
Do you know what? I'm going to go for something a little off kilter and go for 13.
Whoa.
Yeah,
I was not expecting that.
No, yeah.
You know, as much as I like went on the ancient roller coaster at Tivoli and that made me so happy, I just love 13 so much for the fact that it's such a joyous ride. It's not too intense, but it has some intense bits. I like the I don't want to say it because I hate spoiling it for people, but I think my favorite thing about 13 is going on it and there's like someone behind you who's with their mate who's never been on it before.
Yeah.
And they're like, don't say anything. And then they sort of experience that for the first time. And I love that. I think I get an immense amount of pleasure from seeing people enjoy themselves. I guess that's why I do all this content creating stuff. And so that, I love that. It just makes me happy. You know, I was close on saying Wicker Man because that is one of my favorites. And yeah, the roller coaster at Tivoli, that was just absolute joy. But I just really like 13. I think it's a lot of fun and it's really, really underrated. So I'm going to stand up for 13 here and go, yes, 13. Thank you.
Amazing.
You nail that flag in 13's lift hill. Funnily enough, John Wardley said exactly the same thing. He didn't pick 13 as his just got to ride it, but he did say one of his favorite things to do is to ride it with people who don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah,
and
that just makes
see
me happy.
Their reaction.
Yeah, and
yeah,
just like
good.
You just hear people going, "What's going on? Why have we stopped? Why?" You know, love it. Favorite thing, love it so much.
Definitely
good. We will lock that in our vault. We will burn down the classic roller coaster at Tivoli because you didn't want to save it.
Oh,
so
no.
Bye.
If it does burn down now, you're going to feel terrible.
I know, right?
It's made out of wood. It could happen.
God, it wouldn't be the strangest thing to have happened on this podcast where we've said something and then the next day something else happened. But yeah, thank you again, Kip, for joining us. You can find him, like he says, all over social media. Just search Kip Hakes. And we will be back hopefully next week with just a little last minute one before Christmas, before we have our little Christmas break. And don't forget, you can check out all our previous episodes if you haven't listened to them. We've got all sorts, including that interview with John Wardley that I mentioned. So go back and check them out. If you are enjoying us, please subscribe to us and you'll get a little notification every time we release a new episode. But for now, we've been Parkcast.
Parkcast. The UK's original theme park podcast.